Cosmic Shed.
Hello and welcome to the Cosmic Shed. It's just me, Andrew, in the shed today. I just wanted to bring you this very quick interview with Mikaela Musilova. Now, if you've been listening recently, you would have heard my chat with Mikaela just before she set off into the analogue version of Mars. She was going to spend 8 months in a Martian habitat on a volcano on the Big Island of Hawaii, and was planning to send us weekly updates, a kind of a Martian-type thing, where she was going to be sending us diary pieces. And you've probably been wondering where they've been. Well, unfortunately, something went very wrong with Mikaela's mission to Mars. I spoke to her the other morning.
How are you doing?
All right. it's interesting to speak to you quite so soon after our last call.
Yeah. I'm really sorry that you're not on Mars.
Yep, so am I. But oh well. Yeah. I've been saying c'est la vie quite a lot recently, and that's really how it is, you know. Yeah. Life happens.
Yeah. Okay, so what happened?
Right. Where should I start?
Well, there was an accident, right? And then I was like, I don't know what's. Nobody knew what was happening apart from you guys, obviously. Mm-hmm. There was an accident, and I was like, oh no! I hope it's everyone's okay. And then there was lots of silence, and then there was it's finished, and I was like, what? Yeah. And that's all I know.
So. So you've been following it closely, and basically, well, that's kind of it. I mean, I think I can reveal only a little bit more than that.
Okay.
Let me just start from, I think, maybe where we last spoke. So we spoke, I was still in training week.
Yep.
So we were finishing up our training before the mission, and I think maybe a couple of days later, the mission was going to start. It was a very difficult 10 days of the training that we had, but also those are our last days before the start of the mission, so everyone was getting pretty emotional, saying goodbyes. We had to schedule in our last phone calls and everything, and had our last requests. So one of my requests was I really, really wanted to see the ocean before being locked up on Mars, so luckily we managed to fit that in at the very end. And then, yeah, it was just, there was so much going on that next thing we know, we're outside the dome saying goodbye to all the organizers and everything and getting ready to be, closed off for 8 months. And then, yeah, next thing we know, I was the last person in the dome, wave goodbye to the rest of, the researchers waiting outside, and the door closed, and, a funny thing happened, our commander sighted a part of the Martian. I think it was the very first line of the Martian, like, oh, we're fucked now, or something along those lines.
Cool.
And so we just gave each other a big hug and like, okay, we can do this. And I think in the first day we were kind of in this state of denial of, is this really just going to be the four of us for 8 months? Yeah. And so we had to kind of get into the habit of just basically living there, got to know our rooms and everything. And even the first few days weren't kind of our typical days because there was so much we had to do at the very start of the mission. So me as the mission scientist, I had to go through all the different scientific protocols we had because there was a lot of experiments happening at the same time, get that already set up. The others were doing inventory of everything that was there, getting everything set up. However, one of the main problems we had was that from the beginning, it was cloudy on Mars. And so our solar panels were not recharging as much as we would like. So we were actually living on very low power mode for the first few days, which made everything so much more difficult because we had to unplug essentially everything we didn't need. We had to limit the amount of even cooking we could do. Like, we couldn't use the kettle because that was using up too much energy. We couldn't use the treadmill for exercise, so we had to do other things. So already it was very difficult from the very beginning. We had some connection problems with Earth. Not sure how much they were on purpose or just incidental. So we actually had a very kind of difficult start of the mission as it was. And I think that's kind of what ultimately led to the incident happening, is that there were a lot of misfortunes at the same time. And again, I'm not sure how much I can reveal, but let's just say the problem with energy communication, and basically many things ended up happening at the very same time, which led to basically something happened, something went wrong, and a person got injured during this incident. Luckily, in the end, it wasn't anything life-threatening, but it was severe enough that we actually had to call for help. Okay. And the whole situation was made worse that, of course, the dome is on a volcano and everything. So just getting help was also quite difficult. But we managed to get the person to the hospital in good time. They got checked and released actually the very same day. So luckily there was, it was nothing severe, and they had just had to be monitored for the next few days. However, in that those few days where we were basically told now there's going to be an investigation of what happened, check that everything, you know, that went wrong was corrected and that will be made up for in the future so that a similar thing won't happen again. And, well, three of us on the crew were basically just getting ready to get back in and were counting down days until that would happen. And basically a fourth person on the crew, they changed their mind in those few days. And for, again, reasons that probably better if I don't share, they decided that they would rather not continue with the mission.
Okay.
And so they wanted to withdraw. However, unfortunately, the mission couldn't go forward with just three people. So that's why it ultimately ended up getting cancelled. So it took some time and some bureaucracy and everything. And yes, very limited information that we can say about what happened. Yeah. And so, yes, it got cancelled. And now hopefully there will be another mission, Mission 7. Hopefully in a few months this year. But again, that's also not certain because the investigations related to everything that happened are still ongoing. And the different institutions involved in the mission and the experiments, they need to decide what they want to do next. If they want to proceed with another mission, they want to use us three that remain in the crew, or if they want a brand new crew, or they want to change the whole setup of the mission. So a lot of things are now being changed, so we actually, we don't even know if we will be able to return for another mission.
All right. Well, so I'll ask some questions, which obviously don't worry if you can't answer them. But if you know, if answering them gives away too much information, was the accident and the somebody leaving, are they completely unrelated?
Not completely unrelated.
Okay. Is it kind of a people thing? Is it, or is it that the technology or the hardware went wrong, or, you know, do you know what I mean? Is it somewhere between those two?
Again, okay, not sure how much I can say.
Okay.
But okay, so first thing, just to be clear, it's not the same person that got injured that withdrew.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not directly related to that incident. Let's just say it's a personal choice of that person based on everything that happened with the incident, but also a few other factors. They just reevaluated the whole situation and made that decision.
Okay. Okay, so if this was on Mars, one of the problems you'd have on Mars is that it's further away from the sun, so your solar panels would be less powerful, but you would have thought about that before the mission, right? So I guess when the missions to Mars, are they going to have more solar panels, or are they working on more powerful solar panels? Do you know?
So actually, even during our mission, we had a backup plan. Basically, had the solar panels completely crashed, as in we're not able to recharge at all, or we used up all the power or something, we had a backup generator to simulate some other form of energy that we would have used if we were on Mars to substitute for them. Whether it's fuel cells or even, you know, nuclear energy, which of course is not the ideal one.
Yeah.
So I think the plan would be for Mars to have multiple backup plans. So you would, you know, you want to use primarily solar panels, but you should also always have some backup plans. And I'm not sure what ultimately will be used on Mars, but there are a few options, and I guess whatever will be the easiest to put up there and safest for the future astronauts, that's what they're going to go for.
Yeah, because there are clouds on Mars, right? But they're not really clouds that's sufficient enough to block out the sun.
No, it's more like the dust storms could cover the solar panels or things like that, which is, well, for example, what happened to the Spirit ultimately and ended up getting stuck and then couldn't recharge through the solar panels and unfortunately it died.
Yeah, fair enough. So if this happened on Mars, I guess the Mars mission would have a doctor there, or they're all trained to be doctors, or is this... Is it just the case that if somebody was this badly injured on Mars, it would just be really terrible?
Yes, I think there will most certainly be a doctor, some kind of doctor in future missions, just like in a lot of the missions on the International Space Station. You almost always have a doctor, or at least during the crew exchanges. So even for Mars, I'm almost certain there will be someone, you know, that will be trained to be a doctor, or multiple people trained to the best possible degree. So in a similar case, yeah, they would have to do their best that they can there. There's also things that have been working on, researchers have been working on called telemedicine, where, you know, you would be given kind of instructions from, say, Earth on how to operate or deal with situations on Mars. But of course, you have the time delay, possible problems with connection like we had between Earth and Mars. So that's why it's great to have someone on the spot who has some medical training, or ideally as much as possible. And then you can still get help from Earth remotely. But yes, if it was on Mars, they would have to deal with it there. And, you know, there's no chance of shipping that person back very quickly for help. So it may have ended badly there. But luckily, even in our case, it wasn't so severe that the person's life was at risk.
Yeah. Okay. So did you actually get to do any science when you were...
So I started up all our different experiments that the researchers had. We weren't able to get through most of them, but we did start up on a few. So most of them were related to the human factors side of this mission. So everything from, we had to wear various types of monitors on our bodies to monitor our heart rates, but even, for example, the proximity we had within each other, because they were looking at our interactions during the mission. So even everything from how loud we were, or how much time we spent together, things like that. So all those things were being monitored. So all those experiments started up and were collecting data. Some experiments started before the mission. Researchers took some samples off of us. I joked on, I think it was my Instagram, that I had this bold patch for science, where quite a lot of hair was taken off at the back of our heads at the start of the mission, and basically at regular intervals it was meant to be chopped off, and then they would be analyzed to look at things like our stress levels, for example. We didn't get to start our personal projects yet. Actually, my rover from Slovakia was meant to arrive during one of the resupply missions, so obviously that didn't happen, unfortunately. So I really hope that it will work out in another mission in the future. And we also started thinking about what we would start growing in our little mini greenhouse thing we had. But again, we didn't actually get to plant anything yet.
Okay. And what's happening now? Have you come back? I mean, I know the answer, but have you come back? What's happening?
Right, yeah. So the situation became rather complicated because a crew member and I, who would like to participate in the next mission, we got stuck in the US. I called it our Hawaiian limbo because the type of visa that we have doesn't allow us to leave and then come back on the same kind of visa for 2 years. So had we left just after the end of the mission, we would not be able to come back for another mission if it happened within the next 2 years, or even any other kind of scientific job if I wanted to do something in the States in the next 2 years. So we actually had to quickly find another job in the space sector in the US. And we essentially had only a couple of weeks to do that. So we could transfer visas there and essentially stay here in this limbo until we find out what will happen with the next mission. And then based on that, we will return or not. I mean, so we both end up getting jobs working for the Canada-France-Hawaii telescope. Ooh. It's part of the Mauna Kea observatories, where, for example, the Keck from Caltech, those observatories are there. So we're very fortunate that we got these jobs. Very grateful to, it's called CFHT, that they took good quick care of us like this and essentially saved us, really.
Yeah, yeah.
So we're now basically going to be here for the next few months until we hear what happens next. We know there has been a new call for applicants for the next mission. It has been already released. So they have, I think the deadline is the second of April, I think. So if anyone still wants to apply for the next mission, they can. So we'll see what will happen. Personally, you know, I have a lot of my commitments back home in Slovakia, my organization, SOSA company, all my students. So, you know, it wasn't ideal for me because obviously the longer I stay here and should I be able to go on another mission, then the later I would come back to Slovakia. So I'm also keep on weighing out the options of how long can I stay in this limbo or not. So, yeah, it's been very interesting. And actually, I was joking. I feel like I'm a student again, you know, an undergrad where you have no idea what's going to happen next and everything from not having a place to stay and having to crash on people's floors. Like our doctor here in Hawaii, we actually crashed on his floor when we were homeless at one point. And, you know, everything from sharing accommodation and kind of just living in this uncertainty. So I'm joking that the silver lining is that I feel youthful again, you know, like a student. And I get to live in Hawaii for longer, so, you know, that's also
bad,
a good thing.
Yeah, that's not bad at all. So you're getting to see the sea a lot more as well, which is good.
Well, from now on, basically the last few weeks have been really stressful and it's all about last minute searching for jobs and sorting out visas so we wouldn't be in the US illegally, of course.
Yeah.
So now, finally, when we have a more stable position, we can actually go to the beach. So, yay!
Yeah, that's good. That's good. So, what are you actually doing for the telescopes thing?
So, my job is related to data collected by actually a series of telescopes. And I'm going to be studying essentially the inner parts of our galaxy and the dust that's there and trying to understand more the distribution of the dust. That's the simple version of what I'm doing.
Yeah.
But a lot of kind of astrophysics related research.
Okay, that's not a bad second choice, is it, really?
No, I'm actually really enjoying it. I was kind of worried because I hadn't done astrophysics for like 6 or 7 years now. I, you know, switched to astrobiology. And been, you know, and even now, space technology, satellite technologies for the last couple of years. So I was a bit worried that I would be completely off. But when I had my first meeting this year, I was like, oh, I'm following everything. Yeah. I'm not completely lost. It's great. And I get to go back into programming and things, which again, I haven't done in a while. So I'm actually pretty happy how it, you know, helps me refresh all these memories that I've kind of put aside the last few years.
Yeah. Oh, that's cool. Well, I'm glad to hear that. Thank you so much. And I'm really sorry that you're not on Mars, but I'm delighted that you're on Hawaii. So that's kind of good.
Thank you.
Yeah. And keep in touch, obviously. And I don't know, maybe if you if we do an episode on dust near the centre of the galaxy, we'll get back in touch. But if not,
sure.
You'll be back on Mars at some point, I have no doubt.
I really hope so. Oh, yeah. So if you follow me or just ping me every now and then, I'll gladly give you an update about everything.
Lovely. Thanks so much, Michaela.
You're welcome.
Yeah,
Take care.
Cheers.
Bye.
See you.
So sad news about the mission, but of course, Michaela always bounces back and falls on her feet. So I'm glad to hear that she's back doing some wonderful science. And now, I recently sat here in the shed with a friend and we watched the Luc Besson film, Valerian, City of a Thousand Planets. Just a quick review of that one. Don't watch it. Whatever you do, just simply don't watch it. We'll be back very soon with an episode on, well, it's an interview with Mark Hempsall, who is the former president of the British Interplanetary Society, and we'll be talking to him all about Arthur C. Clarke, 2001, and of course the British Interplanetary Society. And as always, thank you very much for listening. The Cosmic Shed.
Science fact.
Science fiction.
And everything in between.